Hello, you're listening to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. If some of our discussions and tips are working for you, why don't you grab a 15-minute call with us at ecommercecall.com. We'll see whether we can help scale your e-commerce business. We will quickly see if we're a fit or whether we can recommend someone else to get you where you need to go. The worst case is you'll have a fun 15-minute chat, and regardless, you'll come away understanding a lot more about your business. Book a call at ecommercecall.com. Hello and welcome to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. Today we're going to do a listener's questions session and go through some of the questions that were posted in the Facebook group. So let's get started. Hi Ian, how are you?
Hello Mark, good afternoon, how are you doing?
Right, yes. So today we asked some questions and answers. We're going to do a question and answer session. And so we asked some of the listeners in the Facebook group to ask us some questions, and they have. So that's good. So if you are not on the Facebook group, please do get on. If you don't know where it is, you should be going to Facebook and you just search for the Ultimate Guide to E-commerce Growth book. That is the group that everybody is on. So we've asked some questions in there, and we're just going to go through them. So the first question is from Eric, and he says, so you make and sell a product that improves productivity, makes life easier for your prospects, but just happens to be uniquely useful during the pandemic. How do you advertise it to hair salons when trade shows are shuttered? Digital platforms have all banned advertising related to sensitive events. So basically, his website is Sam Face Masks, which is they sell.
So he's selling face masks.
Yeah, right. So face masks, and they're kind of like one-use face masks for hairdressers and things like that. So, you know, it's difficult when you get banned from LinkedIn, Google, Bing, and all the other ones. But you know, by the definition of the question, they were saying how do you advertise when trade shows and those ones are shuttered. So those trade shows will be hurting. So they're not actually been able to run, but they will have email lists. So you can, you know, contact them and say, well, you've got an email list of, you know, 2,000 hairdressers. Would you consider doing an email blast to your list sell this product?
You're basically saying you have to sell to the people that already sell to you, people you want to sell to. You've got to get in bed with those guys, isn't it? You know, they're already doing it. So that's simply what it is, basically.
Yes, you go and find...
I can't think of anything else.
No, you go and find people who've got the list. You find people who've got the list, because that's why you're interested in Facebook, because Facebook's got a list of, you know, Facebook's got a list of hairdressers ultimately who's allowing you to access. You know, and there are direct mail lists. I mean, we used to do direct mail before Google came along, and that, you know, you could go and buy all the hairdressers in the UK.
Well, lots of our clients still do.
Yeah.
Don't they? Do lots of direct mail. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can get that way. Or you could go and you could go and say to someone selling to hairdressers already, why don't you put in a coupon for our product with every order, and any order that comes in, we will we'll give you a commission. You know, we'll give you 10%, 15%.
I would say it's probably, if you were able to advertise on Google and Facebook at the moment, you'd probably get completely lost with everybody else. And it wouldn't, if it's a specific type of face mask for hairdressers, I wouldn't necessarily think that's the right place to advertise anyway. Yeah. So I'd have thought getting into bed with people that are already selling to your customers makes sense.
Yeah, I think you'd have to do that. Because if you actually look at face mask market, there's a lot of people who normally sell other stuff are now selling face masks, and they are being able to advertise on Google. So, you know, a lot of the men's suits and menswear people, they're actually saying, oh, we also sell masks. So if you're just selling masks, you're in a bit of a disadvantage. But if you've got something specific to a certain industry, then obviously... find the list, go after the list and see if you can make it work. And I imagine at some point they will remove those restrictions. However, probably people won't want masks at that point. So it's difficult. Okay. So the next question is from a guy called Phil, and he says, how do you prevent the market square test from becoming a race to zero margins when you sell branded goods? So it's similar to the podcast we talked about before when we said, you know, how do you sell, how's the difference in selling when you're selling your own products compared to other people's products, so other people's branded products? So do you want to start on that
I think straight away, the doing the market square test is not just about price. It's one of the variables, but it isn't just, it isn't the only thing. And actually, if I think, Phil, you're saying that you're selling branded goods, so basically you're selling other people's products. Well, price is pretty much set for if you're selling other people's products. So it has to be about something else. Now, you can't be more expensive, but if everybody's selling the same price, you have to get them to buy from you. So you've got to look at things like returns policies, guarantees, delivery costs, delivery time, things like that, because, you know, ultimately, you know, that's where you're actually going to carve out, you know, a bit of a USP. You know, isn't it? I mean, I remember we did this with a golf, someone was selling golf products online, and they're all selling the same type of products, and selling golf products online is notoriously controlled by the brands, the big brands, you know, Titleist, Nike, you know, all the other big
Callaway.
Ones. And Callaway, that was the one. And they're very, very, very strict. But when we did the market test, it showed so clearly why there were two or three players that were bigger than everyone else, like much bigger, like doing 25, 30 million, and then everyone else is doing half a million. And it's so obvious when you looked at it, what they were worried about. So, and it wasn't the price, because the price was fixed. It was about the returns policy and reducing the anxiety. Mm. So you've got to look at everything, you know, what is the recruitment offer? What is the warranty? What are the reassurances? How do they conquer anxiety? You know, can you get it next day? Is it free next day delivery? You know, all those things. Price is just one of them.
This is actually similar to the question Dean's asked below, is how do you compete in the UK niche where a bunch of online stores are all selling the same products to the same people with pretty much the same price without being a race to the bottom? So just, can I come in there on something?
Because
I saw this before I went to bed, and obviously I was thinking about it all night.
Thanks, Dean. Mark's been thinking about you all night, Dean.
Yeah. So basically, if somebody can sell it cheaper than you and make more money, obviously they're going to win. So two models. If you're someone like selling contact lenses, like the Lens Store. Now, what they've realized is that that when people buy for the first time, they're more price sensitive than when they actually just go and say, oh, I'll have some more. So what the Lens Store does, if you come through Google Shopping, which is the world's biggest price comparison website, they make sure they have the lowest price. So if you come through the link on Google Shopping, it discounts all the prices on the website to be the cheapest in the market. Yeah, if you go directly to Lens Store, you see a completely different price. So if you think about it, you know, Ian's going to buy some contact lenses. He looks at the contact lenses, he's price matching, he's really into it. He's saying, okay, they're the cheapest. I'm going to go and buy from them. And then he goes, has a good experience. They get them delivered to him on time. And he goes, oh, I just want a repeat order. I've just got an email from them saying they're doing free delivery today. I'm just going to go, they had a good price last time. They look like it's a pretty good price. So I'm going to go and buy it, repeat order. Him not realizing that actually they do a better price if he went through Google Shopping, but because he's an existing customer, he's not as price sensitive because he's not looking.
And it even says that they're getting a cut price visit, a cut price deal on this visit.
So it shows it, and
that's an absolute key one. Do you know what I think? I mean, that's an obvious one, but do you know what? This is a play with two metrics. It's a play on lifetime customer value and average order value. So what you've just said there is that everyone's selling the same AccuView contact lenses, all at the same similar prices. Yeah. Those guys went, well, we know lifetime customer value is strong, so we're going to be more aggressive to recruit a customer because they buy 12 times a year. So we understand the maths, and that's a play on lifetime customer value. If you're selling other people's products, well, you don't naturally have a lifetime customer value. So if you were selling contact lenses, they only bought once a year, you can't do that play. The only other thing you can do is increase the average order value. So imagine another example from real world, if you're selling a Sonos speaker and it's £380 and that's fixed by Sonos, you know, and everyone's bidding for that £380 sale. Whereas if you're on your site, you've got a kick-ass average order value thing, that's like an upsell, bundling, cross-sell, post-purchase thing that's actually trying to get them to buy something else with it, or it comes with a bundle, and let's say it was a £50 something else that goes with it, you know, you're then bidding for a £380 plus £50 sale, and everyone else is sticking to the £380. So who's going to win the race? Because you've got a bigger play, so you're able to spend more deeply. So, you know, that's the other thing that you can do. It's either play on lifetime customer value or play on an average order value, and obviously make sure that you conquer the anxieties more than everybody else. I mean, I think a business like AO.com, you know, they're selling other people's white goods, and the only reason why they exist is because they looked at the pain and the anxieties of when they're buying these white goods like washing machines, and they went, well, people really worry about when's it going to come, and will you take my old one away, and do I have to take a day off work? Well, so they basically just sorted that out. So it's like, you know, it's next day, choose your slot, next day, or Saturday or Sunday, and we'll take the old one away. And it literally happens. It's you know,
yeah,
you're selling on the anxiety.
Anxiety and cost. And there's another example would be, you know, if you're up against, there was a guy who bought the book the other day, and he was selling safety goods, and he sold safety goods, but he also sold a course with like a subscription course with those safety goods. So if you're just up against him and selling safety goods, and then he's selling safety goods and the course, He can make, as long as he doesn't like lose money selling the safety goods, he doesn't care, because he's recruiting people who are buying safety goods who can sell his course to, which is massive margin. So what he's done is basically found a way to make money out of his list, that if you just go up against him selling safety goods, it's very difficult. So you've got to understand the customers you're recruiting. If you can work out a way to sell them something else, then you don't mind recruiting at break even, because customers are worth a lot more to a business than prospects. So you can do that as well. So let's have a look at the next question.
Yep. And whilst we find the next question, but just remember, when you're selling other people's products, you know, the desirability and convincibility is already in those products, because they, you know, let's say it's a well-known brand. So you don't have to create that desirability or convincibility, because it's already there. But remember that your business becomes a commodity, and the number one question you have to answer if you're selling other people's products is, why should they buy from me? And that,
yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of those stores I see that they you can do a lot by adding trust to it. You can do a lot by adding, you know, we're a family business, here's a picture of our family, who you're buying from. You know, you trust them. What are the people going online and just putting the product online and kind of going, this could be a scammer, I don't really trust them, I don't know who they are, and what happens if it goes wrong? You know, there's people who, you know, you don't necessarily need to be as cheap as eBay, because you can't return eBay goods. Well, it's hard to do it. You know, you have more protection if you go with a reputable seller. That's why people, you know, traditionally would pay a little bit more for John Lewis goods, because they know where they are and they know where they can take them back.
Well, in some cases, you're competing against John Lewis, aren't you? You know, you're an online player, and they come back from John Lewis, they come back from you. Of course, they're going to go back from John Lewis. We've got to be much, much better. You have to answer that question. And until you answer that question, you know, I don't think you'll scale ultimately. You've got to. That's the question you've got to solve. Why should they buy from me?
Yeah, and to be honest, that's the hardest question.
Look at what they're anxious about. Look at Lakeland. You know, they were owning the coffee market, you know, coffee machine market, because everyone else was offering a 2-year warranty and they were offering a 3-year warranty. You know, and that, you know, that was like 3 or 4 years ago. But they debate, well, what do people worry about? Is this coffee machine going to break? Well, John Lewis is offering a 2-year, I'm going to offer a 3-year, because most people return in the first 6 months anyway.
They got to the size where they could say, okay, kitchen mixer, whatever they were.
You need to honor it.
They give us a unique color. You know, we'll only have the red. If you want to buy
exclusive
color, you've got to buy it from us. But obviously, it's difficult to do when you're small. The next question is from Dan. And he says, how do you know how big your e-commerce store can grow with just Google and Facebook ads as the made lead gen? What else would you do? Market stores, influencers, wholesale for a custom jewelry brand? So
we touched on this question before, didn't we? About how big the market is. It's a question we get asked, isn't it? It's how big's the market for flower pots online?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it is a difficult question to answer because it really, the answer we gave the other day was, well, if people are willing to buy your product, it's as big as that. You know, in some cases, you're creating new markets out of nowhere. And, you know, it's a bit like a business like Hotel Chocolat saying, well, how big's the market for selling chocolates online? Well, you know, it's as big as people want to buy, you know. And remember, you know, you don't necessarily know how the market's going to change. But I think two things I'd think about is, number one, if you're able to recruit profitably, you know, and you're working out your return on ad spend, spend as much as you possibly can until that metric fails. And what you'll happen is, if in the unlikely event there is a capped market for that product online, and I don't think I've ever really seen that happen, because the markets move all over the place, and more people buy online, more people, you know, it grows and it changes. But also, you'll be sat with a big mailing list and a big customer list that you can then use to sell other things to that are, you know, similar types of products for the similar demographic. So, you know, you don't have to think so linearly, like your business is never going to change. We're only ever going to sell that one product. You know,
I'm trying to work out why Dan's asking the question. I guess he's asking the question to see whether this is going to be a big business for him or not. And my answer to that would be basically, it's going to be as big as your recruitment offer allows you to go. That's what it ultimately is. If you look at all these, you know, these people we were meeting with last week doing 20 million, they were big as, you know, four or five products. They're as big as their recruitment offer allowed them to go, because they could go and put themselves in front of millions of people a day on Facebook, and enough of them bought for them to allow them to be able to sell.
Yeah.
So it becomes about your recruitment offer and how you can package that to allow it to go after more people. So if you're just going after people who are looking for a specific type of costume jewelry, then you're limited to that search term on Google. So like, let's say it's, I don't know, Victorian costume jewelry. There's obviously going to be a certain amount of people in the UK searching for that each month. And that's the market. That's how big it goes. But if you can take people who aren't looking for that, but might want it, if you put it together into a recruitment offer, and you can target people who are a certain demographic, then that's the market. That's how
in,
big the market
in
can
Facebook.
Be.
That's what he's. Yeah, that's Facebook. What you're saying. So because in
with Google.
Well, in Google.
Display. Yeah.
Yes, I suppose so.
Display. Yeah.
Yes, I suppose so. But Google is the only place you've got intent to buy. So, you know, if someone's Googling Victorian costume jewelry in Google, then obviously that's what you'd come up with Google Shopping and search ads. Yeah. But you're right, in Facebook, there's no intent to buy, but you can be more accurate with your targeting. You can get the right people. And we've just seen some phenomenal growth really there. You know, where, you know, talking about the other day, there's a business there that's doing 10 million and, you know, they want to get to 50 and, you know, and they're doing it primarily through Facebook. But ultimately, the glass ceiling for them is going to be they've got no lifetime customer value because they're only buying once. So if they then bolt on a repeat business mechanic in that business, that's going to be a game changer. Absolutely massive. Yeah. So that's why I was saying, you know, don't worry too much about, maybe it's for VC, maybe it's for funding, maybe they think, well, how do I know how big the market is? And I mean, it's as a very much like a layman's thing, go onto Google Web Trends, have a look and do some keyword analysis, you know, and say, this is the amount of people that are searching for it in Google. And then times that by a multiple, you know, because there's always more, isn't there? And that's basically what we would do. Because, well, how many people a month are searching for this stuff?
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah, that's how we traditionally do it. And then you can kind of go, well, if you can make Facebook work, you can usually scale it higher, because obviously you're taking people who aren't necessarily looking for it at that time. Yeah. If you're waiting for people to look for it, then that's a specific market. Like the GSF car parts of this world, you know, there's a specific market size, people looking for car parts. You know,
yeah.
Which is huge. Anybody who's got a car, but you know, it's a certain size. Okay, so next question. See where we go. This is from Alan. Selling branded products, margins are low, which leaves very little room for cash on the website. Improvements that cure require some coding or even apps, as well as for decent advertising spend. Is there something we could do to improve this? Should we look at our own private label products? So that's kind of similar to the other it's obviously selling other people's products. Mm. And I think, again, Alan, if you look at that customer list, they're obviously interested. I know who Alan is because he's on the level one coaching group. So basically, if you look at that customer list, they're all people who are interested in a particular hobby, and they're all interested in particular things. So you therefore have an opportunity to sell them to as a community, build a community, and build some kind of subscription product around that community, because ultimately, like, they're coming and buying these things. I think it's craft stuff. Oh no, it's not. No, sorry, I'm getting confused. So
isn't it car care cleaning?
No, is that Alan? No, it's
a different Alan.
No, not that Alan. Different Alan.
Oh. Okay. Well, I would say, sorry. I'd say that
I've got a lot of Alans.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to be an online store owner if you're called Alan. I think he's right with that suggestion, actually. You know, I think there's a lot of people who would say if you're selling other people's products, you're obviously bound by their margin. And also, you tend not to get the loyalty that you have. Mm. You know, if it's your own brand, of course, you've got loyalty, you own something, you know, your business potentially gets a lot more valuable, you have better margins. But there's an argument to say, well, yeah, the hybrid solution where you're selling other people's products and your own is also quite interesting. And I know businesses have done that. We're working with quite a few recently who initially launched with their own brand, found it was very difficult to get the desirability, and so changed to selling other people's brands, and then slowly adding their own brands in and amongst that, now that they've recruited a big customer database.
Can I say something on that? Because I think sometimes it's quite interesting where people put their own brands around it. So my friend Graham, who runs a fishing shop, so people come onto his site for the kind of leaders like the Shimano reels and those kind of things, right? So they're coming in for those products. He doesn't sell own branded reels, like fishing reels, because that's always like the big product that people come. He sells own branded accessories that would go with that. So like the chair you sit on, or the box you put your stuff into, or, you know, it's stuff around it. So it was a long time ago, we had someone come to us who built a dog food company. And her strategy was to sell other branded dog foods and then introduce her own dog food to the market. And it didn't work, because that's trying to replace the main brand that people want to go for. If they buy a particular dog food, that's their dog food that they want. What you can introduce is accessories around that. So you can sell a dog bowl, or you can sell, you know, dog brushes, and, you know, you can sell things around the food that would do it. And maybe there's not enough accessories around the food, but certainly that's the strategy. It's very difficult to kind of recruit somebody who buys.
That's a very good point.
Thank you.
Very good. You've impressed me there.
Thank you. Because if that's what they come to you for, that particular product that they're sold on, it's going to be very difficult to displace that. And the only time that they are tended to be displaced is when people have a major life change, such as having a baby, pregnancy, which is why all those fast consumer brands spend so much money trying to recruit new mums, because that's the time when they choose different products, you know, choose different fairy liquid and all that kind of stuff. So
I mean, you can see it for... The desirability in that type of, you know, fishing reel, you know, it's there. The search traffic is huge, isn't it? They've got such kudos and credibility that you just have to be there. And that obviously within the fishing market would lead to many, many other purchases down the line. And if you weren't there in that space, you'd miss out on it.
Yeah. So you can sell into places where people haven't got already got a brand, but they're in that, you know, that they're interested in the thing, the activity. So, you know, say you're selling gardening stuff, you know, people might come to you for a specific type of compost or something like that, but you might be able to sell them the stuff that goes with the compost, you know, something like that.
So you're treating next question, like a lead gen, aren't you?
Yeah. Next question. Best ways to sell a product where many people say it's the best product they've never knew they needed. So that I get quite a lot of these, actually. So the ones that obviously can't go into Google Shopping because people aren't searching.
You don't know what it is.
There's someone on the group, actually, who's selling probiotic cleaning liquid. So, you know, people don't tend to know to sell, you know, to look for probiotic cleaning liquid because they don't know they need it because they don't know it exists. So it's very difficult to actually sell that on Google AdWords because obviously people haven't, you know, they're not searching for it because they don't know it's there. And it's, you know, if you try and put it in front of people searching for cleaning liquid, it's too generic and they're going to, you know, they're mostly likely to have already decided what they want to buy and they just want to go and get some. So in that case, a lot of the time you have to go and build a community around the bigger job to be done and then introduce them to the product. So, you know, like probiotic cleaning, build a community around getting rid of the chemicals in your home so that you reduce the incidences of child and things like that.
You're mainly talking about social, aren't you? Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah. You're social and Instagram. Because you build a community around the bigger need. And then you go and you say, well, here's it. Maybe even start with an ebook or something on.
I think, to be honest, keep it really simple. Think about, you know, what's ultimately the job to be done? Why would anybody, what are people worried about? What are they anxious about with the other cleaning products? And obviously the ad then should lead them into that journey. And it should very much be about the job to be done and the benefits that you get from it. And then that's how you do it. You know, you can't go into Google.
Yeah, you'd go for...
You have to be in Facebook.
You'd be going for the people who couldn't buy supermarket cleaning stuff because... And then you'd be like, well, people with eczema, children with compromised immune systems, adults with compromised immune systems, you know, elderly people who, you know, have skin problems. You know, you'd be going after those niches and saying to them, look, you've got this problem, it's difficult, you want to fix it right now, here's a guide on how to do it, here's a community on how we're doing it, by the way, one of our products that we sell or a couple of our products massively help you in that arena. And you know, once you've got them in there, then you say, well, here's an offer to get started, here's a trial, it's a small piece of cake rather than trying to sell, and you know, just try it. It's the same as someone else on the level one group who sells Gloop, which is it's something that goes on a teaspoon that helps older people or children swallow a pill because they can swallow the whole thing rather than swallowing the pill. And, you know, again, people don't search for that. They don't search for gloopy stuff that allows me to search for pill, swallow pill better. So therefore, he has to go and introduce that to the audience on Facebook and build a community around, you know,
I think that's where a little video that say, you know, that goes to the right people, you know, struggling to swallow, find it difficult, and it very much sells the job to be done, doesn't it? But if you just put that product, a picture of the product on Facebook as an ad, it wouldn't work. You know, that's not enough. Mm. You've got to really tap into that job to be done and what the ultimate result's going to be.
And it's a lot of the people on the call, the level one call last week, they were talking about that, and they, you know, they were kind of worried about having to create videos. But there's actually a lot of tools that you can now create videos with easily. And I was actually going to do a workshop with them. I think I'm going to do another Facebook workshop with them to create those videos because it's got a lot easier. And I'm seeing a big boost from getting the right video and doing it in the right way. So just for the people listening who are on level one, I'm going to do that for you. So that should be good. Okay. Martha says, best ways to sell a product where many people say it's the best product. We've done that one. I'm reading the same question twice. She said, TikTok, good, bad, or plain crazy? Well, I know I'm on TikTok. I'm a TikTok sensation. I had one video that did 150,000 views. Unfortunately, that was nothing to do with my business. It was just me looking silly.
Well, TikTok, was it, somebody was saying, if you want to sell things to mums, you need to be on TikTok and target the, you know, the teenage daughter who influences the mum. And that's something that's quite funny. But it, I mean, obviously, it's supposedly a platform that is cheap, you know, in terms of advertising. You look at what Facebook was like, you know, 6 years ago.
Well, it's not even advertising. It's basically, it's giving you free organic traffic, isn't it?
Mm.
It's free
organic traffic. Yeah, where can you get that? You know, it was what, Instagram and Facebook, you used to get free organic traffic, but you don't anymore.
Yeah exactly. So, I mean, if it's a niche that you can think would make sense and your customers are on there, then now's the time to try it. The only thing you have to do is you have to go on a TikTok and understand the format of it, the kind of music, because there's always different music trending and different ways to do things, and it's slightly different than Facebook and Instagram ads and stuff. It's much more quicker and it's quirky, and so I certainly think it's worth going. I'm sure they'll launch. I am seeing adverts on there, but it seems to be kind of like more enterprise adverts that I'm seeing. So I'm not sure whether they've, you know, they must be coming out with something for everybody at some point. But now they obviously want it to grow. They're giving people traffic. The algorithm is fairly easy to understand. It's, if you can get people to watch the video more than once, you seem to get a lot more views. If you can get into a tag and come up high in a tag, you get all the views. That's why I got all the views on my silly little video. It's because I got picked up by one of the tags that was trending. Just try it and report back, because I know that some of our customers are starting to do it, and they're doing really well with it. So now's the time to kind of do it whilst the corporates are wanting to build it and turn it into something big. So, you know, have a go. James is asking, and this will be the last question because I've got to go to the other call. What is a good add to cart rate when prospecting hard, i.e. running a 90% new customer rate? When should you have a problem with add to cart and new visitors on your website? Yeah, mm-hmm. So that's standard stuff, really. Basically, it's...
Well, let me answer that one. Let me answer. Okay. Let me hang on. Whoa. The quick answer is the add to basket. On average, we want add to basket to be about 10%. But if the average order value is really high, so say, you know, let's say average order value might be £50. And you have a reasonable, you've been trading for a couple of years, you have maybe a lifetime customer value, they're buying twice a year, then we'd expect your conversion rate to be about 4 or 5%, which would be an add to basket, add to cart of 10%. But if you're recruiting heavily and your average order value is higher than £50, you know, typical conversion rate is about 2%, which would mean your add to cart percentage is probably about 7%. Now, the average order value is quite key, because we had a client the other day that's heavily recruiting on Facebook, and their add to cart percentage was 12.5%, but their average order value was £18. So they'd expect it had to be that high, otherwise the metrics just didn't work. But on average, if you're recruiting heavily and you know in your phases of growth, I would say add to cart between 6% and 7%. If you are in the retention phase of your business where you've been going for a couple of years and you're actually growing nice and you've got a bit of repeat business, I'd say your add to cart should be about 10%.
The question is from James, and he sells smoked salmon, and he's on the level one coaching group. So Basically, he needs to really understand what his lifetime customer value is. He has a subscription box, which you can get people onto. If they stay on the subscription box, they'll be staying on for a certain amount of time. So if you can, basically what you need to make sure is you understand your full numbers. So if you can understand what your lifetime value is for someone who's buying smoked salmon or someone who buys casually, then you will understand what you can recruit at. Because you might find you can only recruit at a certain level that doesn't make you profitable, but then you go and say, well, how can I make sure that people the lifetime value comes up. So you just need to be keep looking at your numbers so that you keep opening it up. So that if you know your lifetime customer value is like £100 a year or something like that, then you know, obviously that's limiting what you can recruit. But if you can move your lifetime customer value up and could be more innovative with the products, make them buy more often, go for more upsells, and it moves up to £200, then suddenly you can recruit. You know, if you could only recruit £20, now you can recruit at £40, and suddenly that opens up a massive amount of new advertising areas that you couldn't advertise before. And if you keep doing that process, then you're laughing because you completely dominate the market because no one else can actually buy that traffic as well as you can.
I think the ad to basket, if you take it in isolation, let's assume that there's, you know, it's not a main subscription business, it's a normal one. You know, the bounce rate is key. You know, that's going to be a real key indication. You know, if that bounce rate, if they're landing on the product page and the bounce rate is high, let's say over 60%, you know, you'll find you've got a low ad to basket. So you need to think about, well, which products are getting a high bounce rate? You know, which products are people landing on? What's my key landing pages? So, you know, I might have, you know, 8 products which account for, you know, 80% of all of my landing pages. Which ones are bouncing higher than 60%? Go and have a look at those products and put yourselves in the eye of the shoes of a new customer or a new visitor that lands on that. Say they don't know who you are. You know, am I getting across the key convincibility, the key desirability? Am I conquering the anxiety and killing the pain points? Am I giving them a reason to buy now? You know, have we followed the checklist through? Mm-hmm. Have a look at that. You know, because it's that bounce rate is so key to the add to basket stat. So bounce rate should be less than 60%. Add to basket, you know, between 7% and 10%, depending on how new you are.
Yeah. Just quickly before I go, businesses like James really need to focus on the first time customer offer experience, putting together a pack, a bit like Naked Wines did. You know, you've got the 12 pack of wine that's sorted out for you. That, you know, it's like, what is the sample pack? What is the trial pack for the smoked salmon? How can you get people on in a very easy way that they don't have to think about it, so that you're kind of reducing all the frictions to allow people to get on?
Yeah.
Anyway, I've got to shoot, but thank you very much for listening, everybody. I'll speak to you next week. If you haven't grabbed a copy of a book, please do. It's on www.ecommercebook.co.uk, or if you are in the rest of the world, because we now have lots of listeners from all over the world, it's book.hammersleybrothers.com. And that will give you the US version of the book. Cool. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark.
See you soon.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.